I didn't think God would give me more than I can handle. This sermon is for those who've experienced a breaking point in life. Excruciatingly difficult times. Times that make you want to quit. Times where you felt ground into nothing, less than a person, despairing even of life. Times where you think, I thought God didn't give us more than we can handle. This sermon is not for those who think that people with very hard trials must be able to handle them, no problem, otherwise God wouldn't have given them to you. It's also not for the person who says, well, I've made very good choices in life, therefore I don't have trials. And it's also not for those who are not comfortable with someone going through a long and a difficult trial in life and just want a quick and easy answer. This sermon is for those who have gone through times like that in life where you ask the question, where do we get that phrase, God won't give us more than we can handle? Well, there is a phrase that says something like that, and let's see where it is. It's in 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 7. Because there is a time where that is said, but there's a context that is also said in. And it's important to understand that. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 7, let's break into the middle of this. It says, and do not become idolaters as some of them were. It's talking about Israel. As it was written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Nor let us commit sexual immorality as some of them did, and in one day 23,000 fell. Nor let us tempt Christ as some of them also tempted and were destroyed by serpents. Nor complain as some of them also complained and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. Therefore, let him who thinks he stand take heed, lest he fall. No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it. And this is where we get the phrase from. But it's important to understand the context and what it is actually saying here. And if we look at what the context is, it is Israel being tempted to do evil, to sin. And then we get down to verse 13 and it says, no temptation has overtaken you, which is such as common to man. And when it talks about these temptations, it says God is faithful. He's not going to allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able in this context. But with the temptation, we'll also make a way of escape or help you out of that. And if we look at the word temptation there, it's 3986 for those who write down Strong's numbers. But it's a putting of a proof by experiment, by experience of evil, a solicitation. So a temptation is a good translation of that. Now, is there a trying here? Is there a trial? Yes. There is a trial here where there is a temptation that takes place. A person goes through and a proving to come out the other end of that. So in the sense of the word trial, this is a trial, what it's talking about here. That is a type of trial that we must endure and pass. But this is one that is tempted, where a tempting is to do evil or tempted by evil. Like Christ said, he says, you have not yet resisted sin to bloodshed or death. Resisting against sin is a type of a trial that we experience, and that is what this is talking about. And in this context, that is what this is referring to, is that type of a trial there. It doesn't necessarily capture all the suffering and the types of suffering that we go through in this life. That is one of them. That is a big one. And that is something that we do go through. If you remember James 1 and verse 2, where it says, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials. The word trials there is the same word. It's the same type of word, which is interesting. If you start studying the words trials, temptations, and things like that, sometimes in that case it was temptation. In this James, it's translated as trials. It says, no, the testing of your faith produces patience. So what James is referring to is saying, when you are presented with evil, when you have a trial to sin and those type of things that press on you, that count it all joy when you fall into that. No, it's testing your faith. It's testing your faith in God and the decisions that you make in life. And that does produce patience. It's the exact same word there. Now, the context, though, is one of the temptation, a trial that includes the tempting to evil. Now, that's the context of Corinthians. And God says He won't give us more than we can bear, but will provide a way of escape for us. And that way of escape, you know, takes many forms. It's saying, look, I won't put you in a circumstance where maybe you're, you know, it's a trial to do the wrong thing, or maybe you're already in it. Maybe you've already succumbed somehow and are halfway through and you feel stuck. God says, no, I'll provide a way of escape for you out of that. That is how merciful our God is for us in these things. But He won't do it to where you're completely just overwhelmed and blown away. And Christ set this, you know, the example for that type of a thing in life is He had to resist sin and the people of, you know, that were after Him throughout His entire life. But if we look at the words for trial, we look at the examples of trials, that is not the only type of thing, the only type of trial that the Bible talks about. When you look at the words, there's other words behind that that mean different things. They're not all the same things. Some of them are related. And how are they related? They're related in the sense that there is a proving time or a period of time where a result comes out. This particular instance where God says, I won't give you more than you can handle, is in reference of being tempted with evil. That is the context where He says that. Another translation of trial, if you turn to 1 Peter 4 and verse 12. So the idea of testing and trying involves trying and suffering in an actual trial period. But they don't all include the idea of being tempted by evil. 1 Peter 4 and verse 12 says, Beloved, do not think it strange concerning the fiery trial, which is to try you as though some strange thing happened to you. And the word here is something different. You know, it's a different meaning. It's a fiery trial, the ignition, smelting, a burning, you know, the idea is that it's a fiery, hard to deal with burning trial. And it is not the same word as the other one, where it's talking about tempted by evil. So if you look and start reading through the Bible, you'll notice there's some, we don't get that in the English language a lot of times, but in the original language, you can see there's different meanings to what's being said, and it's deliberate. It's not an accident that it's said there. Turn over to Hebrews 11, verse 36. We have another word. Now, this word is related closer to the first one, but it's not the same word. It says, Hebrews 11, verse 36, still others had trials of mockings and scourgings, yes, and of chains and imprisonments. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. They were tempted. They were slain with a sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and mountains, in dens and caves of the earth. When we look at this word here, trials of, that word's different. It is a test. It's an experience. It's almost an assault, you know, on you. But it is not the same word as being tried with sin or resisting against a temptation. So we see, even you can even see in here, that is actually a separate concept in here. In the middle of this, it says that they were actually tempted. So they were sawn in two, were tempted. So that is a flavor of a trial, is being tempted. And that is where God says He won't give us more than we can handle, is in that context. And I think it's important to understand that, because in life sometimes, as a Christian, you can, if we don't wrap our heads around some of the things that can take place, it's very easy for us to break ourselves. And even our faith I've seen broken. And that can easily happen. Now, let's go through this. Let's dig a little bit deeper through this. So when God is saying He won't give you more than you can handle, He's saying that again about evil. And that holds a lot of promise. That should be very encouraging to us. And He'll provide a way of escape. So God does not want us to stay trapped in sin. God wants us, even if you know, we've made a mistake, to be able to come out of it, to not be trapped, to not stay in that type of a thing. God wants to deliver us from those things. That's how merciful He is. But I ask the question, are there examples in the Bible where people had trials that were horrendous, or very large, very hard to deal with, maybe more than they could deal with? Are there examples in the Bible that were, you know, apparently that pushed them beyond what they were able to handle? And I think if we ask that question, let's look and think about a few of those. And we'll come back to some of these points in a bit. First one would be maybe Paul. Paul said he was beaten with rods. They beat him with metal rods, stoned once. So stoning is actually to kill somebody. So he actually got stoned where they either dropped a big stone on him to crush him or they threw a bunch of stones on him. There's different forms of it. He actually got stoned once. They thought he was dead. He got up and left. He was shipwrecked 3 times. He was a day and night in the ocean. He's floating around the ocean in the middle of nowhere for a day and night. He got mugged many times, he said, in robberies. He was weary. He had no sleep. He's hungry. He's cold. He had no clothes to wear. Imagine running around naked. He had no clothes. So when you look at this in the description of this life, those are some pretty big things. Those are some pretty hard to deal with things. Those are not small things. So another example. How about Job? We all know the story of Job. I won't go through it in detail, but Job lost all of his children, all of his possessions. Then he lost his health. While God didn't condemn him for his words, he did break down. He did come to a point where it was too much. Didn't he? Job 3 verse 3 says, "May the day perish on which I was born, and the night on which it said a male child is conceived. May that day be darkness. May God above not seek it, nor the light shine upon it. May darkness and the shadow of death claim it. May a cloud settle on it. May the black..." He just goes on and on and on, referring to the day of his birth. And he says, "I wish I was never born." Does that sound like that it was a little much at a point in time? It does. Elijah. What about Elijah? Elijah had just done some great works. He was slayed the prophets of Baal. And then he was running because there was a threat against his life. And he said to God at a certain point, he says, "You know what? It is enough. Now, Lord, take my life, for I am no better than my fathers. I am alone and left, and they seek to take my life." This is the point that he had gotten to. It wasn't necessarily a one-time thing, just a one emotional statement. He was very tired, very fatigued, and overdone. And you know what? God had mercy upon him. And this is where he said, "Yes, okay, I have preserved others, and we will pass the mantle on." And they passed it on to Elisha at that point in time. And then Elijah was taken away. So was that too much? Apparently, in his life, it was. What about Joseph? Do you think there was ever a time in Joseph's life where his brothers threw him into a pit and told him he's dead, went into Egypt, he was wrongly accused, he was thrown in prison wrongfully, all of these things were wrongly done? Do you think that those things, if you think about any of these examples, what would we say to that person? "Oh, God will give you more than you can handle." As if to just sweep it away, like, well, obviously you could handle that. Obviously you could have handled that, so either God wouldn't have given that to you. What you see here is you see things that push people past, way past, what was comfortable for them to handle. You see this time and time again in the Bible. What we just read before in Hebrews, let me read it again. Think about some of these things that happen. Hebrews 11:36, it says, "Still others had trials of mockings and scourgings." We know what a scourging is, right? We know what a scourging is that Christ had to go through. I don't think you could say to a person who's been scourged, "I think God said that, you know, you can handle that, otherwise you wouldn't have had that." That is too much to handle in so many regards because of what it does to your body. I won't go into the details of that. There's chains, there's imprisonments. People were stoned. They were sawn into. I guess God thought that you could handle being sawn in two, is what we're saying when we say God won't give you more than you can handle. These are some big, horrific things that happen to people. Now, we'll get to the point. I only want to draw the attention to this part to start with. We'll get to the point of how God works us through these things. But I think it's important for us to maybe reset and dig a little bit deeper into what the Bible says. There are times in life where things will happen to you that might be in too much for you to handle or feel that way. Sometimes people have never experienced that, so they won't know what that means. Other times people have experienced that to the nth degree. And it's a very difficult place to be. It's a very hard thing to do and to go through. David in the Psalms. I'll give you one example. Psalms 88, verse 1. Psalms 88, verse 1. This is David crying out in the middle of where he is in his trials in life. And he says, O Lord, God of my salvation, I have cried out day and night before you. Let my prayer come before you. Incline your ear to my cry. For my soul is full of troubles, and my life draws near the grave. I am counted with those who go down to the pit. I am like a man who has no strength, adrift among the dead, like the slain who lie in a grave, whom you remember no more, who are cut off from your hand. You have laid me in the lowest pit, in darkness, in depths. But to you I cried out, O Lord, and in the morning my prayer comes before you. Lord, why do you cast off my soul? Why do you hide your face from me? This is not just a guy becoming emotional one period of time, and I'm whining because, you know, my iPad won't boot. This is a guy who is in the depths of despair for life, in a dark pit, in a dark place. Have you ever been there? Is it okay for us in the church to be in that spot ever in our lives? If you read the Bible a little bit closer, you'll see there were some sufferings and things that happened to people that weren't just from being tempted to sin, that were just very hard things in life that had to be to deal with. Another example, John the Baptist. John the Baptist. The story is a bit of a hard one, if you think about it, because you see, John the Baptist was called one of the greatest men who lived. But we all know how his story ended. He was beheaded. In what seemed like a petty revenge, he was beheaded. A lot of times we think that if we're godly or we're called great by God, then surely we won't have to suffer, right? If I obey, if I do the right thing, I'm not going to have to suffer. That God will bless you with a comfortable life. It has to do with obey God and everything works out really well. We think if we strive to please Him, that we can be spared from the loss of life like John the Baptist. And I pray that we will be spared from those things. But you see here, by the life and the death of John the Baptist, it shows us that goodness of a person and godliness doesn't guarantee that there might not be a suffering that takes place. It doesn't guarantee anything. John the Baptist was called one of the most godliest men alive by Christ himself, by God. Same thing with Job. He was called a righteous man. His friends said, you're a sinner. God said, no, I'm sorry, this is a righteous man. Those two are not a cause and effect or a correlation that happens there is not the reason why. There will be times that righteous people will have to suffer. The psalmist Asaph grappled with this issue. Psalm 73, verse 2. I'll just read one more. Psalm 73, verse 2, it says, but as for me, my feet had almost stumbled. My steps had nearly slipped, for I was envious of the boastful. When I saw the prosperity of the wicked, for there are no pangs in their death, but their strength is firm. They're not in trouble as other men, nor they plagued with trials like other men. Surely I have cleaned my heart in vain and washed my hands in innocence. For all day long I've been plagued and chastised every morning. He's saying they're not even trying to obey God, and yet they seem to be solid and happy. I am trying to do the right thing, and yet I am plagued all the day. I don't read these to be depressing, but I think it's important for us to reset some things and dig a little bit deeper, because if you don't deal with how things really are, sometimes you can break yourself in the process. And it's very important for us to understand what that process is and how we navigate that the way that God says it from His Word and from His Bible. Now, I read some examples in the Bible. There's plenty more. I'm not going to take the time to just go through a lot of different ones, but there's plenty more things if you dig deep that are very difficult to deal with situations where people were pressed and pushed past where you would think that they can handle. What about modern day examples? You can probably think of some in your own life of people you know or things that you've seen. And I'm not just talking about things that happen in the news around the world. I'm talking about things that happen to church members and people you know. Church lady lost two daughters in a fire. Trying to rescue them, couldn't get back in. Door locked. Lost two daughters in a fire. Is that something that God says, well, you know, won't give you more than you can handle? I can guarantee you that that is a devastating thing that will stick around forever. I know a man personally, a friend from college, who ran over his 2-year-old daughter with his car. Accidentally. How devastating is that? Is that something God says, well, you can handle this, so I'll let you do that? That is a very, very difficult thing for anybody who knows or has been around something like that to deal with. And just recently, we had friends in Ohio, too, that our daughter, 22, 23-year-old, died in a car crash coming back from the winter family weekend. Had a full life ahead of her. Died in a car crash. People come down with cancer. Is that because they didn't eat whole wheat bread? You know what? There's 3- and 4-year-old kids who are coming down with cancer these days. And we don't know why a lot of this happens. But things are happening. And this is part of what takes place in this world. Things are happening. It doesn't have to be a death. It doesn't have to be something like that. People can be out of work for long periods of time and trying desperately to get back into it. That can really weigh on you. So I think it's a very callous thing for us to say to people that God won't give you more than you handle, just as if we can sweep it away and say, oh, well, obviously that you can handle this. Do you know what? I know if you talk to somebody who's been through something very, very difficult, there are black times in life that are very hard to deal with, very hard to go through, and very hard to get to the other side with. As a Christian, not doing something wrong, even as a righteous person, if you want to put it in those terms, not some cause over here, but things do take place in our lives. So how do we make it then? How do we navigate this? Sorry if all this sounds depressing or discouraging. I don't mean it like that. I think it's important for us to understand, first of all, that there were going to be potentially, and I pray every day that it doesn't happen, things that are overwhelming for you to deal with that would take place in your life. Not based on something you did or didn't do, but that might take place in your life and with a Christian around you, another brother or a sister around you, it may happen. How do we make it? How do we make it? Well, let's turn over to Matthew 11, verse 28. And notice, we'll read a few scriptures on this. There's a few points here. You know, there's probably 50 points to cover in this, but I'm not going to. I'm going to cover a few key points that are important to keep in mind. And we'll notice the language and the words reaffirms exactly what I'm saying, the way that Christ talks about these things. Matthew 11, verse 28, first of all, says, come to me, all you who are labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Labor and are heavy laden. So a lot of times we think, well, we're just, the trial will be done or over, or we don't have a hard time, or what do those words mean? Labor. It means to feel fatigued, to toil, be wearied. Your soul is drained out from you, is what that means. Have you felt that way? Have you gotten to that place? Do people tell you just to be happy because God's not going to give you more than you can handle? Christ says if you feel that way, if you feel fatigued, toiled, weary, that's what that means. Heavy laden, it means to load up. That is, figuratively, to overburden. Heavily laden, if you think about that, means, you know, you have standards for trucks and what you can put on them and things like that. It's overloading it so the truck can't drive, grinds the wheels, falls over, things fall out, whatever it is. That's the same concept there, is what that means. So Christ didn't say you're not going to have an extreme trial like that. He says if you do, and if this is where you are, if you labor and are heavily laden, he says something about that. You'll notice this. He's saying that that will happen or could happen. It could be the case. But he's also saying, come to me. I will give you rest. And that rest means to refresh, to give rest. That's exactly what that means. But what does he say? Verse 29 is a key thing. Take my yoke upon you. And learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. A lot of times when you're in the depth of a trial and you read that, it almost, to me, I've read that before and I thought, no, it's not. No, it's not light. And I've had to ask, but, and say, it doesn't feel light, but that's not what he's saying here. There's an incredible word picture that's super important to understand what he means by this. Let me read you from the Believer's Bible Commentary on a yoke. It says, the fatal mistake for the believer is to seek to bear life's load in a single collar. God never intended a man to carry his burdens alone. Christ, therefore, deals only in yokes. A yoke is a neck harness for two. And the Lord himself pleads to be one of those two. He wants to share the labor of any galling task. The secret of peace and victory in the Christian life is found in putting off the taxing collar of self and accepting the Master's relaxing yoke. If you ever seen a yoke, we don't really know what that means today because we have tractors and other stuff. But back in the day, a yoke, when you yoke oxen together, say you're plowing a field, is you would have two oxen next to each other and you have a wood beam that goes across both their necks and connects them together so that they can pull in tandem. This is the picture when we see the word yoke. Christ is saying, yoke up to me and I will carry. I will make it light. I will help that be light for you, is what he's saying. It's not saying, whatever I give you is not easy, because he doesn't say that here. He's saying, you're heavily laden, you are overburdened. But let me, yoke up to me. I will carry a lot of this for you. He does not get you out of it, you'll notice. But he does say, I will help that to be light, because when I yoke with you, my burden is light, if you want to think of it that way. That's a different picture. Things might happen. Hard things might happen to you. But Christ says, come to me, yoke up with me, and I will help make that lighter, to ease the burden, to take the load, to make it feel light so that you can say, you know what, with God and Christ in this hard problem I have, this trial, yes, I can feel how I can do this. Does that happen right away? Does it happen immediately? Sometimes it doesn't. But yoking up to Christ, he says, I will give you rest. I will. And again, notice he didn't say, I'm taking it all away. He's saying, yoke up and I will make this easier. Yoke up. I think that's an incredible picture if you think about it. And Paul, if you turn to 2 Corinthians 4, verse 8. 2 Corinthians 4, verse 8. It doesn't mean we won't have sufferings, but it does mean that somebody is carrying it with you. If you ask, if you go, what's easy to do naturally as people is to withdraw and just cope. To isolate ourselves off, to go somewhere else. God says, Christ says, yoke up with me. I will make this lighter. 2 Corinthians 4 verse 8, Paul's describing this process. Notice, does he say, I don't have any sufferings? He says, we are hard pressed on every side. We are hard pressed, yet not crushed. We are perplexed, but we're not in despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Struck down, but not destroyed. Always carrying about in the body the dying of our Lord Jesus Christ, that the life of Jesus also may be manifested in our body. When Christ bears the yoke with you, this would be a better description over time of what it can be like. That is, yes, I'm hard-pressed. Yes, I'm pushed down and crushed. Yes, I'm perplexed, and this is bewildering. And yes, this is hard to deal with, but we're not destroyed. We're not decimated. We're not forsaken. That's the difference. When Christ bears a yoke with you, he didn't take it all away. Somebody losing their 2-year-old daughter didn't all of a sudden get her back. But over time, with Christ in it, they learned to say, yes, that was crushing and it is crushing, but I am not destroyed. I am strengthened. So the first thing that we find is, in dealing with this, is to understand that there may be things there, but Christ wants you to yoke up to him, and he wants to carry more of that for you. He wants to hold more of that on his shoulders and you less on yours. That is a very, very, very beautiful picture if you think about it. Somebody right there who can go through that with you and pick up some of the load. Pick up some of that from your shoulders. What else do we have with this? The second thing, how we navigate through this, is to realize that your heart may be broken in the process, but God can heal the broken heart. It takes time. Turn to Psalms 34, verse 18. Psalms 34, verse 18. The reality is your heart may be broken. The Bible talks about this. Psalms 34, verse 18. It says, "The Lord is near to those who have a broken heart and save such as have a contrite spirit." You know, we've read this before. We even sing it. But what are the words there underneath that? The word broken there means literally to burst, to crush, to destroy, to hurt, to quench, to tear. So a broken heart really is a crushed heart in this context. A crushed heart. And saves such as who have a contrite spirit. Contrite literally means crushed. Again, like powder. Crushed into dust, like powder. We don't capture that in the English language on this side. But God is saying, the Lord is near to those who have a burst, broken, crushed heart. And saves those who are of a crushed spirit. That's a good description, I think, sometimes. And I'm not saying that people who have hard times only dwell on this or only say these things, but there are times where you have been, or could be, completely, utterly crushed into fine powder. So that's what you feel like. The Bible describes that that can happen and does happen. And it says the Lord is near to those who are there. It's near to those, ready to hear, ready to answer, ready to respond to that. Was Christ ever like that? Going through as a human? Was he ever like that on this earth? Matthew 26, verse 37 and 38. Matthew 26, verse 37 and 38. So that Christ says, "And he took him, Peter, and the two sons of Zebedee, and he began to be sorrowful and deeply distressed. Then he said to them, 'My soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even to death. Stay here and watch with me.'" Another translation, if you look at the words, exceedingly sorrowful, and what that actually means, it says, "My soul is crushed with grief to the point of death." Crushed with grief into the point of death. In fact, you look at him in the prayer and that he's praying in the garden, the excruciating amount of what he had to go through, he had to ask God to take that away from him. He was sweating like drops of blood. You can't tell me that that's just something that was an easy thing to handle. That was pushing somebody way past, if you understand the death, what normally you can handle on your own, those type of things. And when we read those scriptures like what we read in Psalms 34, verse 18, and that God is near to those who are of a crushed spirit, this can happen in life. These things can happen. And if you felt that, you know what I'm saying. And I don't mean that, again, to dwell on that side, but I think it's very important for us to understand, as a Christian, sometimes somebody sitting next to you could be feeling that. Maybe you're not. But somebody could be feeling crushed to like their fine powder of nothing. And it can be a lot of different things. And if you think about it, the stages of loss and grief we have to go through sometimes. You lose a child. Something horrific happens. It could be not just a loss of a person. It could be a loss of health. It could be loss of a number of things. The stages that you go through, we have to be patient with. You know what? God's patient with you as you go through those. Does he just drop you if all of a sudden you're crying out to him? Why? Why does it happen? You know, the stages of loss and grief are different. You can look it up. Here's five stages I saw. There's different, people have different stages of grief that they'll list out. Here's one. First stage of grief is denial and isolation. The pain is so raw, so real, that you either haven't accepted it, or you're just trying to cope on your own. Second is anger. All of a sudden you can start getting angry. You know, this doctor did this, or maybe you're angry at God. Like, why? Why? I didn't do anything. Why did I have to do this? A third stage moves into bargaining. where you bargain with, you know what, if we only had gone to the doctor earlier, or if I hadn't have eaten this, or God, you know, if you change this, I will, you know, be perfect for the rest of my life. It's kind of the stage of bargaining. And then the next stage of grief is depression. There's grief at the loss, going through an actual loss, mourning that loss, being able to work through that. And the last stage is acceptance. Calm. It doesn't mean there's no pain, but there's a stage that you can eventually move into. And the problem is, you can't skip those steps. God made us as humans. If you think about that, as we are as humans, those are natural steps that we go through when we grieve things. I've been there. I know people have been there. And you know what? Sometimes you can just like, you'll put on a good face, you can come, you can be happy, but then there is something underneath where you can't change it. It's fundamentally there, and you have to give it time to work through. God's patient with us when we go through that. He works us through those things. Keep coming to Him, ask Him to bear the yoke is an important thing. And realize that there is a healing that takes place in our hearts, but we have to give the time. And this is what I've learned, is that God will heal our hearts. The brokenhearted, the crushed in spirit, God will heal. But it's not just like that. Please heal me. It's not just immediate. And a lot of times we're not comfortable with people when they go through that phase, I think, right? Dealing with and supporting somebody who might be there is an uncomfortable thing. So we always say things like, you know what, just get over it. You had enough time. How do you know? Or, you know what, God, you know, wouldn't give you more than you can handle. You can handle this. So don't worry about it. It's like we want to feel better because it's hard to enter that world where that person might be for a period of time. Job was there for a long period of time. Other people have been there for a period of time. I know people personally. I've been there for a period of time. But that's not to focus on the bad part, because while those things can be overwhelming, they stretch us. They help us to grow. You know, sometimes, like I said before, you put on a good face. You know, I've had that said to me many times. You know, in years past, when things were really difficult, it's like, wow, you guys are handling it so great. I appreciate the sentiment, but the honest truth is I wasn't handling it great. And there's a lot of difficult things, a lot of hard times, and a lot of rawness that sits underneath sometimes. And it's easy to say some things, but, and I'm not going to sit here and, you know, oh, woe is me, or whine, or, you know, have sympathy. That's not why I say that. I'm just saying that, you know what, sometimes, sorry, not handling it well, not doing well with it, is what I would say. It goes on. Some people can pick up on that, which is really great, it's really good. But the key point is that healing, the broken heart and the crushed spirit, God will do, but it will take you some time. Give yourself the time for your heart to heal and ask God to heal the heart. Again, it doesn't mean the thing necessarily goes away. Sometimes it does. But God, even in the midst of a hard trial, can heal your heart. This is what I found. He can start to heal your heart. Do you know what one of Christ's mission statements was when he came to earth? Luke 4 verse 18 says that. It says, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted." That is one of the things that Christ wants to do to people, all humanity, and us, is to heal it. Doesn't mean the pain goes away. Doesn't mean the trial goes away. But the healing process can start. You can't push somebody to that, but it can start. You can start to have strength and courage even in the middle of it. You know, many times God will provide some things to help heal in life as you go through a hard part. I remember, going back to a personal example, I remember one year, many years ago, we were early stages of things. A lot of you know my son, who is nothing but a blessing. There were some very difficult time periods in life. In fact, there's periods of time that I don't even remember. They were so hard to deal with. I do remember one time that we were going to the feast after a very, very difficult time of... If you remember back in the days, there was a lot of seizures and things that were taking place. So we had medicines and stuff that were trying to calm it down, because every time he had a seizure, he would reset and have to kind of start over with a lot of stuff. And so we tried different seizure medicines. Well, we were going to the feast and they put him on a seizure medicine. Well, this one basically turned him into kind of a wild animal. It just severely affected everything. And I remember after a hard, long time and then going to the feast saying, you know what? I just want to go to the feast. I just want to hear some sermons. I just want to somehow be refreshed. You know what I got? I didn't get that. Didn't get that at all. In fact, it was one of the hardest feasts I've ever been through. In fact, I remember I was reaching a breaking point at one point, and I stopped to pray because it was just too much overwhelming nonstop that after a while I could only handle so much. In praying, you know, please, I just need a break. And guess what? It got worse. Those are the times where you ask the question, I thought you said you wouldn't give me more than I can handle. And I remember, you know, almost losing it. And the one thing that I wanted to have happen was to listen to some sermons at a feast. I didn't get to hear but one sermon because it was so bad I had to always be out. But there was one day that I remember, all of a sudden, he calmed down, sat on my lap. Nothing was going on. It was the most bizarre thing. And I sat in church and was able to hear a single sermon at the feast. And you know what? That sermon, the minister got up and he gave an example of a little boy who was walking around after church and just doing his own thing. And you could, you know, the little boy, he was sitting counseling with a man who had lost his wife. He was very distraught. And the minister was talking to him. And he couldn't, you know, comfort the man. He was just crying and, you know, going on about it. Well, this little boy is just wandering around. Came and just sat up in his lap, this old man's lap. And just was, you know, rubbing his tears away, basically. And then the man just stopped, you know, and he was not consolable, but this act by this little boy, all of a sudden, the man was, he just said, you know, that's like a gift from God right there. It was one of those things when you hear that, you're like, that is a complete, you know who that kid was? That was David. And I remember thinking, the one that I hear, you know, you have to remind, and it reminded me that there still is a little boy in there. Even though it can be excruciatingly hard, even though it doesn't seem that way, even though things are very, very escalated, there's a boy in there that God is taking him through. And he has an impact on other people and us. And you know what? It was a brief second. Did it all go away? Nope. But there was a healing of the heart that started to take place. Because you realize, okay, I don't know, maybe this is 5, 6, 7 more years. I don't know. But you know what? God is in this. And the broken heart part of it, that's too much, he can start to heal. It didn't all go away. But over time, there has been a healing there. The times where I wanted to give up completely, and I ask for something, and I know this has happened to other people, I've had this conversation, I pray and ask that, please, I can't take anymore, and you get more. That might happen. You might be pushed way past what you think you can deal with. Don't mean to be negative, but sorry, that can happen. But the yoke that Christ can take on and the healing of the broken, crushed spirit, he can start to do. I can tell you today, a lot of that in those, there's a period of probably 9 years that are very hard to remember. It's a different story today. Everything isn't completely different, but we have a beautiful boy that impacts more people than you and I ever do. More people in this world know him, love him, and I can tell you what that does to a heart is it heals. So, the reason I say this and bring this up is that things may happen. Things may be difficult, but God can start to heal, repair that while you're in it. It doesn't necessarily go away. And maybe it does go away over time. But give yourself time. Give other people time for their heart to be able to heal. And God will heal the brokenhearted. That could be us, could be you. Ask for that healing. Ask for that. Psalms 56 verse 8 says, "You keep track of all my sorrows. You have collected all my tears in your bottle. You have recorded each one in your book." The weeping and the tears and all that you've cried for these things are not lost. God's writing down each one of those tears that you cry in life. So what do you and I do to engage with other people that you may see having very, very difficult times? Job 6:14 says it well. It says, "To him who's afflicted, kindness should be shown by his friends. Even though he forsakes the fear of the Almighty." And you read that last part and go, well, wait a minute. Well, if they do leave the church, that's not what it's saying. It's saying even if it appears like the person struggling doesn't understand, maybe he's, you know, saying things and grappling with it and maybe even mad at God for a bit, so what? The person who's afflicted, kindness should be shown by his friends. Don't need people to moralize to you, but you need mercy for people. Job didn't sin, but he still grappled with the concepts that were going on. So how do you and I yoke up to somebody else? When you yoke up to somebody else, how do you handle that with somebody? Some things not to say. Don't say, well, you know, God won't give you more than you handle, so just kind of get over it. Don't trivialize the loss. Don't say, you know, they'll have another chance. These things are all true, but kindness should be shown. Don't say you should stop crying. You've already cried enough for what's happened. Or you're just focusing on yourself. You know what? Here's what you do say when you yoke up to somebody. Say, "I'm very sorry to hear that. I'm very sorry to hear that. Is there anything I can do for you? Is there anything?" You may say, you know, God can heal. It will take time. But you know what? I'm going to be there every step of the way for you, no matter how long it takes. No matter how long it takes. And you know what? Sometimes, actually, don't say anything. Don't focus on the problem. You know what? A lot of times, when a person's going through a hugely difficult time, the one thing they just want is to feel normal, like a person. So just be normal and talk. Have a conversation. Laugh if you can. Talk through things. You know what? Just sometimes having someone around gives somebody boost enough to where they can go back to their problems, but they want to just feel normal sometimes. So we yoke up with each other. Are you the type of person when you yoke up with somebody, you're going to start to tell them, like, you know, hey, have you tried CoQ10? Have you getting enough sleep? You know, 8 glasses of water a day? You know, is that the type of person? Or I know this kind of vitamin helps with, you know, depression, or, you know, and just, you probably cried enough. Why don't you just move on? Are you that type of person to yoke up? You know what? Somebody will unyoke from you, and that's fine. You should. Don't be that person. Be a person, when you yoke up with somebody, you're carrying that so that they feel lighter with you. Aren't we supposed to be like Christ? Christ does that for us. Why don't we do that for others? If you're talking to somebody who's having a hard time, they should go away feeling like, wow, temporarily, my burden may have been lifted a little bit. I feel a little bit lighter. Man, I feel slightly refreshed. That's how you yoke up with somebody properly and do it. You carry some of that for them. That's what you do. Don't make it feel like they just want to run the other way, run away from you. And then one day, let's finish in John 16:20. John 16:20 says, "Most assuredly, I say to you that you will weep and lament, but the world will rejoice. And you will be sorrowful, but your sorrow will be turned to joy. A woman, when she's in labor, has sorrow because her hour has come. But as soon as she's given birth to the child, she no longer remembers the anguish for the joy that the human being has been born into the world. 22, therefore now, you now have sorrow, but I will see you again, and your heart will rejoice. and your joy no one will take from you. It may be that there are some hard things for you to handle in life. And when my daughter asked me that question, I didn't have the best answer. But in looking at it and praying about it and asking God, I think we know that there will be some times where things may go on. And they may be hard to deal with as a Christian. And it's not because you're righteous or not. You may have something that you have to deal with in life. But go to Christ and yoke up with Him, because He says, let me help this feel lighter to you. And you know what? Start to pray. You can pray, and I pray every day, things will be taken away. But also pray that God would start to heal a broken, crushed heart. Because that can take place at the same time, whatever is happening, the heart can be healed. And ask for that. And it may not go away. Maybe someday it will. The right time, the right place. Maybe it won't be there any longer. And that's what we all pray. But let's pray for that for ourselves and for each other, that God would heal the crushed spirit. And you and I, when we deal with each other, let's yoke up with each other so that when we go away from sitting with a person, they feel a little bit more refreshed, not a little bit more down or judged or something. Let's yoke up with each other that way. And you know what? One day, even those sorrows that we had, where we can have our hearts healed even today, one day, we'll rejoice, and that joy one day will never be taken away.